Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Flaneur podcast. For much of recent history, if a young man liked to powder his hair pink and wear it en coup, he would probably do it in private. Not so in the 18th century, when such a style was so fashionable, gents had themselves painted by society painter John Smart in just such a get-up. His portraits are exquisite, delicate images of the young, beautiful and well-connected. Presumably they were also a good likeness, as the commissions rolled in, and he even travelled to India to ply his fancy a picture of your sweetheart trade. Why then is Mr. John Smart not as well known as Reynolds and Gainsborough and all the rest of the famous portrait boys? Mainly because he worked in little. Smart was one of the finest miniaturists of the 18th century, a contemporary and rival of Richard Cosway. He worked predominantly in watercolour on ivory, displaying an anatomical understanding, a precise control of his tiny brush, and a desire to set down an honest record of what he could see. This exactness was criticised by rival artists, who preferred to win clients with a more flattering style. Until 9th of December, Philip Mould is showing 45 works by Smart from a single owner collection. The smallest is little bigger than a thumbnail, the largest created after he returned from India, reaching the dimensions of a man's palm. All demonstrate Smart's mastery of his medium and refined palette, not to mention his 20/20 vision. These are the 18th century equivalent of saving a picture of your kids or partner on the home screen of your phone. It was all very well having a hulking great full-length portrait of your wife hanging in the library, but Smart gave people the opportunity to take an image of their loved one on their travels. As well as watercolour on ivory, Mould is also showing several pencil and watercolour drawings on paper. Here the pale paper contrasts less with the portraits than the grey background he chooses for the ivories. Smart's techniques continue to develop throughout his life. In his final years, he is found experimenting with gouache, enjoying the finish it gives, which is closer to that of oil paint. Smart's portraits give a glimpse of British society in one of its richest and most well-fed periods. Most of the miniatures are framed with jewels, demonstrating the wealth of the patrons and something of the portrait's aims. These were not icons for quiet contemplation, but boastful works to be shown to envious friends. The most common reaction by a chap's colleagues to his latest John Smart portrait was almost certainly, "I don't know what a girl that beautiful sees in you."
You saw the boy under. parting was so very sudden. But I will meet you at the door. Only we will understand. Only we will understand. You saw the boy under the man. You saw the boy under the man.
Ginger Beer by singer-songwriter Kate Thomas. The new book, Syria Speaks, is a compilation of works by over 50 artists and writers from Syria, both established names and new voices. Whilst creating the book, the editors did ask themselves what place there was for art amongst such suffering, but realised that creativity is not only a way of surviving the violence, but also of challenging it. The 312-page book is full of examples of literature, songs, poems, cartoons, posters, paintings, puppet shows, and other means of expression that artists have found to convey their feelings and thoughts about the situation in Syria. It is not simple on the ground. No one backs the regime. But some have lost their ability to back the revolution, as it has become so complicated. Now, instead of one enemy, there are many. Contemporary art has not had the acceptance and publicity that it has in the West. The revolutionary posters and performances that have appeared are a new phenomenon for Syrians who have endured a 40-year silence. The book begins with an anonymous blurred photo montage of the victims of the 1982 Hama uprising. This has not been mentioned in Syria for years, even though an estimated 10 to 25,000 people were killed by government troops. The built-up resentment over this atrocity came out when protesters met extreme violence in 2011. The peaceful revolution was soon militarised. The artists and writers work in different ways. There are personal tales. One writer tells of phoning a friend's mobile phone and being told he is dead. There are diaries of travels around the region, whilst history and background is also provided, making an in-depth examination of the conflict from the point of view of artists and writers caught up in it. The influence of manga and a satirical script for a TV show, Who Wants to Kill a Million, are also included. There is also an examination of the challenges facing citizen journalists in this most YouTubed of revolutions. Densely filled with information, Syria Speaks is a thorough exploration of creativity in a country at war and shows the importance that the arts have in a time of violent revolution. A riveting central performance by the young Leah Van Aken is the foundation of Stations of the Cross, a German film that tracks 14 key moments in the life of a young girl. Ostensibly about the dangers of religious extremism, it is as much about the damage done to children by bullying parents. Maria, played by Van Aken, is a waif-like child being brought up in a strict Catholic sect. Her understanding of life and religion is driven by her mother's beliefs, which include a hatred not just of pop music, but also gospel singing. Maria's natural vivacity is constantly squashed by the bullying mother, who criticises and punishes her daughter excessively. Writer-director Dietrich Brueggemann has chosen to shoot Stations of the Cross in 14 long takes, the camera sitting unmoving and observing what takes place. Movement is introduced by setting one scene in a moving car and another in a busy school gym. These lengthy shots are well composed and demonstrate it is possible for filmmakers to retain visual interest without wild editing and car chase cutting. The static camera on a tripod technique echoes early filmmaking and quietly suggests that the subject is deeply old-fashioned. With a sincerely held, though deeply twisted view of Christianity and life, Maria soon believes that her destiny is different to other people's. Convinced this is also God's view, she embarks on a journey that tenuously reflects the Stations of the Cross, the Catholic markers of Jesus' journey to his death. The setting might be religious, but the effects of a bullying parent enforcing their worldview on a child can apply in any area of life. The events of Maria's life are engrossing, though painful to watch. The film is 107 minutes long, making each scene around 7 minutes long. This piles pressure on the young actors, but they pull off a blinder. Finally, we finish with some dramatic industrial pop. Thanks for listening. This is Loss from Luca.